Chapter 15. Neurologic Emergencies. Introduction. Stroke is the third leading cause of death in the United States after heart disease and cancer. It is common in geriatric patients. Current statistics show that more men than women have strokes, but strokes are more likely to be fatal in women. Other contributing factors for stroke include family history and race. African Americans, Hispanics, and Asians have a higher risk for stroke. Fortunately, there are revolutionary treatments available for stroke, and many hospitals are certified stroke centers. Some patients can avoid the devastating consequences of an acute stroke if they can get to the hospital in time for treatment. Seizures and altered mental status may also occur when there is a disorder in the brain. Seizures may occur as a result of a recent or an old head injury, a brain tumor, a metabolic problem, or simply a genetic disposition. Your ability to recognize when a seizure has occurred or is occurring is critical for the patient because you can then provide the appropriate management. Altered mental status, AMS, is a common presentation in patients with a wide variety of medical problems. Although it is tempting, you should not make assumptions about the cause of AMS. There can be many possible causes. Some are obvious, some are not. Intoxication, head injury, hypoxia, stroke, metabolic disturbances, and many more. Obviously, treatment varies widely as well. Patients with AMS present a particular challenge in that they may be difficult to handle and frustrating to treat. Your professionalism is paramount in these situations. This chapter describes the structure and function of the brain and the most common causes of brain disorders, including stroke, transient ischemic attack, TIA, seizure, headache, and AMS. It then discusses the signs and symptoms of each condition. You will also learn how to approach and assess a patient with a neurologic emergency and why prompt transport to an appropriate medical facility is so important. Anatomy and physiology. The brain is the body's computer. It controls breathing, speech, and all other body functions. All of your thoughts, memories, wants, needs, and desires reside in the brain. Different parts of the brain perform different functions. For example, some parts of the brain receive input from the senses, including sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch. Others control the muscles and movement, while others control the formation of speech. The brain is divided into three major parts: the brainstem, the cerebellum, and the largest part, the cerebrum. The brain stem controls the most basic functions of the body, such as breathing, blood pressure, swallowing, and pupil constriction. Located just behind the brain stem, the cerebellum controls muscle and body coordination. It is responsible for coordinating complex tasks that involve many muscles, such as standing on one foot without falling, walking, writing, picking up a coin, and playing the piano. The cerebrum, located above the cerebellum, is divided down the middle into the right and left cerebral hemispheres. Each hemisphere controls activities on the opposite side of the body. The front part of the cerebrum controls emotion and thought. The middle part controls touch and movement. The back part of the cerebrum processes sight. In most people, speech is controlled on the left side of the brain near the middle of the cerebrum. Messages sent to and from the brain travel through nerves. 12 cranial nerves run directly from the brain to various parts of the head, such as the eyes, ears, nose, and face. All of the rest of the nerves join in the spinal cord and exit the brain through a large opening in the base of the skull called the foramen magnum. At each vertebra in the neck and back, two nerves, called spinal nerves, branch out from the spinal cord and carry signals to and from the body. Pathophysiology. Many different disorders can cause brain dysfunction or other neurologic symptoms and can affect the patient's level of consciousness, speech, and voluntary muscle control. The brain is most sensitive to changes in oxygen, glucose, and temperature levels. A significant change in any one of these three areas will result in a neurologic change. As a general rule, if the problem is caused primarily by disorders in the heart and lungs, the entire brain will be affected. For example, when the patient has no blood flow, cardiac arrest, he or she will go into a coma and can have permanent brain damage within minutes. However, if the primary problem is in the brain, such as a poor blood supply to one side of the brain, the patient may have signs and symptoms affecting only one side of the body. A low oxygen level in the bloodstream will affect the entire brain, often causing anxiety, restlessness, and confusion. Stroke is a common neurologic condition that is potentially treatable. Other brain disorders include infection and tumor, which may themselves cause seizures, AMS, and headaches. The information in this chapter will help you better understand, communicate with, and care for patients who have experienced a neurologic emergency. Headache. One of the most common complaints you will hear from your patients in terms of pain is headache. Because it is subjective, a headache can be a symptom of another condition, or it can be considered a neurologic condition on its own. Millions of people experience a headache every year, but only a small percentage of these are caused by a serious medical condition. The brain and skull do not actually sense pain because neither contains pain receptors. The pain associated with a headache is felt from the surrounding areas of the face, scalp, meninges, membranes that cover the brain and spinal cord, larger blood vessels, and the muscles of the head, neck, and face. Most headaches are harmless and do not require emergency medical care. However, headaches can be caused by a stroke, tumor, infection of the central nervous system, or hypertension, all of which are potentially life-threatening conditions. A patient who presents with a sudden severe headache or a headache with other signs and symptoms should be considered in serious condition and requires a complete assessment and transport to the hospital. An incident in which you have more than one patient reporting a headache may indicate carbon monoxide poisoning. Tension headaches, migraines, and sinus headaches are the most common types of headaches and are not considered life-threatening, although they may be debilitating for the patient. Tension headaches are the most common type of headache. These headaches are caused by muscle contractions in the head and neck and are attributed to stress. Patients usually describe the pain as squeezing, dull, or as an ache. This type of headache does not have any associated symptoms and usually does not require medical attention. Migraine headaches are the second most common type of headache and are thought to be caused by changes in the blood vessel size in the base of the brain. Adults and children have migraine headaches. Women experience migraines 3 times more often than do men. Frequently, the patient will have a history of migraines and will tell you that this episode is similar to one in the past. Pain from a migraine headache is usually described as pounding, throbbing, and pulsating. Migraines are often associated with visual changes, such as flashing lights or partial vision loss. The patient will often have nausea and vomiting. Migraine headaches can last for several days. Sinus headaches are caused by pressure that is the result of fluid accumulation in the sinus cavities. Patients may also have cold-like signs and symptoms of nasal congestion, cough, and fever if they also have a sinus infection. Patients may report increased pain when they bend over or when their head is moved forward. This type of headache is self-limiting, and pre-hospital emergency care is not required. Although most headaches are not life-threatening situations, there are patients with a chief complaint of headache who will require medical attention. Serious conditions that include a headache as a symptom are hemorrhagic stroke, bleeding in the brain, brain tumors, and meningitis. You should be concerned if the patient complains of a sudden onset, severe headache, or a sudden headache that has associated symptoms. Headaches with fever, seizures, or AMS, or following head trauma are potentially life-threatening. A sudden, severe headache, often described as the worst pain the patient has ever had, could be a sign of a hemorrhagic stroke. The blood from a ruptured blood vessel irritates the tissues of the brain and can cause increased intracranial pressure, resulting in severe head pain. This type of pain may initially be localized and then become more diffuse as the irritation in the meninges spreads. You should suspect a stroke in patients with a severe headache, seizures, and AMS. Early signs of increased intracranial pressure include headache, vomiting, AMS, and seizures. Increasing intracranial pressure can be from a hemorrhagic stroke, a blood vessel swells and ruptures, or from head trauma that may have occurred hours or days before the event. Your patient assessment should include asking the patient if he or she has experienced any recent head trauma. Bacterial meningitis, an inflammation of the meninges caused by a bacterial infection, is a central nervous system infection in which the patient may complain of a headache, stiff neck, fever, and sensitivity to light. This is a serious condition requiring prompt medical attention. Use standard precautions and provide supportive care of the ABCs. Provide a quiet, darkened environment when possible. Stroke. A cerebrovascular accident, CVA, or stroke, is an interruption of blood flow to the brain that results in the loss of brain function. Lacking oxygen, brain cells stop working and begin to die. Medical science currently has little to offer in the way of treatment once these cells are dead. However, it may take several hours or more for brain cells to die, even when it appears that severe disability will occur. In some cases, a trickle of blood may still be getting through to the affected area of the brain. This blood may supply enough oxygen to keep cells alive, but not enough to allow them to work properly. For example, if cells that are responsible for controlling the left arm are starved for oxygen, the patient will not be able to move that arm. The brain cells will develop ischemia, a lack of oxygen that causes the cells not to function properly. If normal blood flow is restored to that area of the brain in time, the patient may regain full use and control of the arm. Unfortunately, many patients having a stroke deny or ignore their symptoms and delay seeking medical attention. The delay in seeking care can result in devastating consequences because time is brain. There are two main types of stroke, ischemic and hemorrhagic. An ischemic stroke is due to the direct blockage of blood flow through the cerebral arteries. This blockage can be due to thrombosis, where a clot forms at the site of the blockage, or due to an embolus, where the clot forms in a remote area, such as a diseased heart, and then travels to the site of blockage. In hemorrhagic stroke, a blood vessel ruptures, causing increased pressure in the brain and subsequent brain damage. Types of stroke. Ischemic stroke. Ischemic stroke is the most common type of stroke, accounting for more than 80% of all strokes combined. When blood flow to a particular part of the brain is cut off by a blockage, clot, inside a blood vessel, the result is an ischemic stroke. This can be from a thrombosis or an embolism that blocks blood flow. As with coronary artery disease, atherosclerosis in the blood vessels is often the cause. Atherosclerosis is a disorder in which calcium and cholesterol build up, forming a plaque inside the walls of the blood vessels. This plaque may obstruct blood flow and interfere with the vessel's ability to dilate. Eventually, atherosclerosis may cause complete occlusion, blockage of an artery. In other cases, an atherosclerotic plaque in the carotid artery in the neck will rupture. A blood clot will form over the crack in the plaque, sometimes growing large enough to completely block all blood flow through the artery. Deprived of oxygen, parts of the brain supplied by the artery will stop working. Patients with ischemic strokes may have dramatic symptoms, including loss of movement on the side of the body opposite from the side where the blockage has occurred. Even if the blockage in the carotid artery is not complete, smaller pieces of the clot may embolize, break off, and be carried by the normal flow of blood deep into the brain, heart, or lungs. If this piece of clot ends up in the brain, It may become lodged in a smaller branch of a blood vessel. This cerebral embolism then blocks blood flow. Depending on the location of the lodged clot, the patient may experience a range of symptoms, from nothing at all to complete paralysis. Hemorrhagic stroke. Hemorrhagic stroke accounts for 10% to 20% of all strokes and occurs as a result of bleeding inside the brain. The free blood then forms a clot which squeezes the brain tissue next to it. When that tissue is compressed, oxygenated blood cannot get into the area and the brain cells begin to die. Certain people are at higher risk of hemorrhagic stroke, which commonly occurs in people experiencing stress or exertion. The people who are at highest risk are those who have very high blood pressure or long-term elevated blood pressure that is not treated. After many years of high pressure, the blood vessels in the brain weaken. If a vessel ruptures, the bleeding in the brain will increase the pressure inside the cranium. Cerebral hemorrhages are often fatal, although proper treatment of high blood pressure can help to prevent this long-term damage to the blood vessels, reducing morbidity and mortality. Some people are born with weaknesses in the walls of the arteries, called aneurysms. An aneurysm is a swelling or enlargement of part of an artery resulting from weakening of the arterial wall. Figure 15.5 is an angiogram of a cerebral aneurysm. Many people with an aneurysm have a sudden onset of a severe headache. The headache is from the irritation of blood on the brain tissue after the artery swells and ruptures. When a hemorrhagic stroke occurs in an otherwise healthy young person, the likely cause is often a weakness in a blood vessel called a Berry aneurysm. This type of aneurysm resembles a tiny balloon or berry that juts out from the artery. When the aneurysm is overstretched and ruptures, blood spurts into an area between two of the coverings of the brain called the subarachnoid space. These types of strokes are called subarachnoid hemorrhages. Again, patients with this type of stroke experience a sudden severe headache, typically described as the worst headache they have ever had. If the patient gets to the hospital rapidly, surgeons may be able to repair the aneurysm. However, like other brain bleeding and cerebral hemorrhage, this condition is often fatal. Transient ischemic attack. In some patients, normal processes in the body will break up a blood clot in the brain. When that happens quickly, blood flow is restored to the affected area, and the patient will regain use of the affected body part. However, this often indicates that the patient has a serious medical condition that may prove fatal. When stroke symptoms go away on their own in less than 24 hours, the event is called a transient ischemic attack, TIA. Some patients call these mini-strokes. Although most patients with TIAs do well, every TIA is an emergency. It may be a warning sign that a larger, significant stroke may occur in the future. Approximately one-third of patients who have a TIA will experience a stroke soon after the TIA. For this reason, all patients with a TIA should be evaluated by a physician to determine whether preventive action should be taken. Signs and symptoms of stroke. The general signs and symptoms of stroke include the following: facial drooping, sudden weakness or numbness in the face, arm, leg, or one side of the body, loss of movement and sensation on one side of the body, lack of muscle coordination, ataxia, sudden vision loss in one eye, blurred and double vision, difficulty swallowing, a primary reason for good airway management in a patient with a stroke, decreased or increased level of responsiveness, speech disorders, dysphagia, difficulty expressing thoughts or inability to speak, expressive aphasia, slurred speech, dysarthria, difficulty understanding others, receptive aphasia, decreased or absent movement in one or more extremities, sudden and severe headache, sudden loss of balance or trouble walking, confusion, dizziness, weakness, combativeness, restlessness, tongue deviation, coma, left hemisphere. If the left cerebral hemisphere has been affected by a stroke, the patient may have a speech disorder called aphasia, an inability to produce or understand speech. Speech problems can vary widely. Some patients will have trouble understanding speech but be able to speak clearly. You can detect this problem by asking the patient a question such as, "What day is today?" In response, the patient may say, "Green." The speech is clear, but it does not make sense. Other patients will be able to understand the question but cannot produce the right sound so as to provide an answer. Only grunts or other incomprehensible sounds emerge. Strokes that affect the left side of the brain can also cause paralysis of the right side of the body. Right hemisphere. If the right cerebral hemisphere of the brain is not getting enough blood, patients will have trouble moving the muscles on the left side of the body. Usually, they will understand language and be able to speak, but their words may be slurred and hard to understand. Interestingly, patients with right hemisphere strokes may be completely oblivious to their problem. If you ask the patient to lift their left arm and they cannot, they will lift their right arm instead. They seem to have forgotten that the left arm even exists. This symptom is called neglect. Patients with a problem affecting the back part of the cerebrum may neglect certain parts of their vision. Generally, this is hard to detect in the field because of the patient's ability to compensate without conscious effort. Nevertheless, you should be aware of the possibility. Try to sit or stand on the patient's good side because he or she may be unable to see things on the bad side. The problem of neglect causes many patients who have had large strokes to delay seeking help. Strokes may not be painful, therefore a patient may be unaware that he or she has a problem until a family member or friend points out that some part of the patient's body is not working correctly. Bleeding in the brain. Patients who have bleeding in their brain, cerebral hemorrhage, may have very high blood pressure. High blood pressure can cause the bleeding, but many times the high blood pressure is a compensatory response to the bleeding itself. The blood pressure increases as the body attempts to force more oxygen to the area of the brain where the damage is occurring. Remember, the brain is located inside a box, skull, with only a few openings. When bleeding is occurring inside the brain, the pressure inside the skull increases. The body must increase the blood pressure to get blood to the brain's tissues. Monitoring the blood pressure and watching for a trend of increasing blood pressure is an important sign. Blood pressure may then taper off and return to normal. Significant drops in blood pressure may also occur as the patient's condition worsens. Conditions that may mimic stroke. The following three conditions may appear to be a stroke. Hypoglycemia, a postictal state, a period following a seizure that lasts between 5 and 30 minutes, characterized by labored respirations and some degree of AMS. Subdural or epidural bleeding, a collection of blood near the skull that presses on the brain. Because oxygen and glucose are needed for brain metabolism, a patient with hypoglycemia may present like a patient who is having a stroke. With good patient assessment, you should find out whether the patient's medical history includes diabetes. All patients with an AMS should have their blood glucose level checked if allowed by your local protocol. A patient who has experienced a seizure may look like a patient who is having a stroke. This is often referred to as the postictal state. However, in most cases, a patient having a seizure will recover rapidly within several minutes. Subdural and epidural bleeding usually occur as a result of trauma. The dura is a leathery covering over the brain next to the skull. A fracture near the temples may cause an artery to bleed on top of the dura, resulting in pressure on the brain. The onset of this epidural bleeding is usually very rapid after injury. In other cases, the veins just below the dura may be torn and bleed. This is referred to as subdural bleeding. The onset of subdural bleeding occurs more slowly, sometimes over a period of several days. With subdural and epidural bleeding, the onset of stroke-like signs and symptoms may be subtle. The patient or family may not even remember the original injury that is causing the bleeding. Seizures. The incidence of seizures in emergency medical care is high. EMS systems have reported that as many as 30% of their 911 calls involve a patient having a seizure. In the United States, it is estimated that 4 million people have epilepsy. A seizure, or convulsion, is a temporary alteration in consciousness. The different types of seizures can be classified as generalized, partial, and status epilepticus. A generalized seizure, formerly called a grand mal seizure, is typically characterized by unconsciousness and a generalized severe twitching of all of the body's muscles that lasts several minutes or longer. This type of seizure results from abnormal discharges from large areas of the brain, usually involving both hemispheres. In other cases, the seizure may simply be characterized by a brief lapse of consciousness in which the patient seems to stare and not respond to anyone. This type of seizure does not involve any changes in motor activity and is called a pedimal or absence seizure. A partial seizure begins in one part of the brain and is classified as simple or complex. In a simple partial seizure, there is no change in the patient's level of consciousness. Patients may complain of numbness, weakness, or dizziness. Their senses may also be involved, with patients reporting visual changes and unusual smells or tastes. A simple partial seizure may also cause twitching of the muscles and the extremities that may spread slowly from one part of the body to another, but it is not characterized by the dramatic, severe twitching and muscle movements seen in a generalized seizure. Patients may also have brief paralysis. In a complex partial seizure, the patient has an AMS and does not interact normally with his or her environment. This type of seizure results from abnormal discharges from the temporal lobe of the brain. Other characteristics may be lip smacking, eye blinking, and isolated convulsions or jerking of the body or one part of the body, such as an arm. Patients may also experience unpleasant smells and visual hallucinations, exhibit uncontrollable fear, and perform repetitive physical behavior, such as constant sitting and standing. Some seizures occur on only one side of the body. Others begin on one side and gradually progress to a generalized seizure that affects the entire body. Depending on the type of seizure, the patient may have no loss of consciousness, but still experience body shaking or muscle tremors. Most people with lifelong or chronic seizures tolerate these events reasonably well without complications, but in some situations, seizures may signal life-threatening conditions. Often, a patient may experience a warning prior to the event, referred to as an aura. The seizure is characterized by sudden loss of consciousness, chaotic muscle movement and tone, and apnea. The patient may also experience a tonic phase, usually lasting only seconds, in which there will be a period of constant muscle contraction and trembling, tongue biting, bladder incontinence, or bowel incontinence. During a tonic-clonic seizure, the patient may exhibit bilateral movement characterized by muscle rigidity and relaxation, usually lasting 1 to 3 minutes. Throughout a tonic-clonic seizure, the patient exhibits tachycardia, hyperventilation, sweating, and intense salivation. Most seizures last 3 to 5 minutes and are followed by a lengthy period, 5 to 30 minutes or more, called a postictal state, in which the patient is unresponsive at first and gradually regains consciousness. The postictal state is over when the patient regains a complete return of his or her normal level of consciousness. In most cases, the patient will gradually begin to recover and awaken, but appear dazed, confused, and fatigued. In contrast, an absence, formerly called pedimal seizure, can last for just seconds, after which the patient fully recovers with only a brief lapse of memory of the event. Seizures lasting more than 5 minutes are likely to progress to status epilepticus. Seizures that continue every few minutes without the person regaining consciousness or last longer than 30 minutes are referred to as status epilepticus. Recurring or prolonged seizures should be considered potentially life-threatening situations in which patients need emergency medical care. If the patient does not regain consciousness or the seizure continues, protect the patient from harming himself or herself and call for advanced life support, ALS, backup. The patients need advanced airway management and medication to stop the seizure. Causes of seizures. Some seizure disorders, such as epilepsy, are congenital, which means that the patient was born with the condition. Other types of seizures may be caused by high fevers, structural problems in the brain, or metabolic or chemical problems in the body. There is also a percentage of the population who will experience a seizure in which the cause cannot be determined, idiopathic. Epileptic seizures usually can be controlled with medications such as phenytoin, Dilantin, phenobarbital, or carbamazepine, Tegretol. Patients with epilepsy will often have seizures if they stop taking their medications or if they do not take the prescribed dose on a regular basis. Seizures may also be caused by an abnormal area in the brain, such as a benign or cancerous tumor, an infection, brain abscess, or scar tissue from some type of injury. These seizures are said to have a structural cause. Seizures from metabolic cause can result from abnormal levels of certain blood chemicals, e.g. extremely low sodium level, hypoglycemia, low blood glucose level, poisons, drug overdoses, or sudden withdrawal from routine heavy alcohol or sedative drug use, or even from prescribed medications. Phenytoin, a drug that is used to control seizures, can cause seizures itself if the person takes too much. Seizures can also result from sudden high fevers, particularly in children. Febrile seizures are usually very unnerving for parents to observe, but are generally well tolerated by the child. Nevertheless, you must transport a child who has had a febrile seizure because this condition needs to be evaluated in the hospital. The fact that a second seizure may occur is worrisome, and if it occurs, the patient requires rapid transport to the hospital so possible causes can be identified. The importance of recognizing seizures. Regardless of the type or the cause of a seizure, it is important for you to recognize when a seizure is occurring or whether one has already occurred. You must also determine whether this episode differs from any previous ones. For example, if the previous seizure occurred on only one side of the body and this seizure occurs over the entire body, an additional or new problem may be involved. In addition to recognizing that seizure activity has occurred and/or that something different may now be occurring, you must also recognize the postictal state and the complications of seizures. Because most seizures involve a vigorous twitching of the muscles use a lot of oxygen. This excessive demand consumes oxygen that is needed for the vital functions of the body. As a result, there is a buildup of acids in the bloodstream, and the patient may turn cyanotic, bluish lips, tongue, and skin from the lack of oxygen. Often, the seizures themselves prevent the patient from breathing normally, making the problem worse. In a patient with diabetes, the blood glucose value may drop because of the excessive muscular contraction of a seizure. If approved in your system, monitor the blood glucose level closely after a patient with diabetes has a seizure. Recognizing seizure activity also means looking at other problems associated with the seizure. For example, the patient may have fallen during the seizure episode and have an injury. Head injury is the most serious possibility. Patients having a generalized seizure also may experience incontinence, meaning that they may lose bowel and bladder control. Therefore, one clue that unresponsive or confused patients may have had a seizure is to find that they were incontinent. Although incontinence is possible with other medical conditions, sudden incontinence is very likely a sign that a seizure has occurred. When the patients regain consciousness, they are naturally embarrassed by this temporary loss of control. Do what you can to minimize this discomfort by covering the patient and assuring him or her that incontinence is part of the loss of control that accompanies a seizure. The postictal state. Once a seizure has stopped, the patient's muscles relax, becoming almost flaccid or floppy, and the breathing becomes labored, fast, and deep in an attempt to compensate for the buildup of acids in the bloodstream. By breathing faster and more deeply, the body can balance the acidity in the bloodstream. With normal circulation and liver function, the acids clear away within minutes and the patient will begin to breathe more normally. The longer and more intense the seizures are, the longer it will take for this imbalance to correct itself. Likewise, longer and more severe seizures will result in longer postictal unresponsiveness and confusion. Once the patient regains a normal level of consciousness, the postictal state is over. In some situations, the postictal state may be characterized by hemiparesis, or weakness on one side of the body resembling a stroke. Unlike the typical stroke, hypoxic hemiparesis soon resolves. Most commonly, the postictal state is characterized by lethargy and confusion to the point that the patient may be combative. You must be prepared for these circumstances in your approach to scene control and in your treatment of the patient's symptoms. If the patient's condition does not improve, you should consider other possible underlying conditions, such as hypoglycemia or infection. Altered mental status. Aside from stroke and seizures, the most common type of neurologic emergency that you will encounter is a patient with an AMS. Simply put, AMS means that the patient is not thinking clearly or is incapable of being aroused. In some cases, the patient will be unconscious. In others, the patient may be alert but confused. The range of problems is wide, and the causes are many, including hypoglycemia, hypoxemia, intoxication, drug overdose, unrecognized head injury, brain infection, body temperature abnormalities, brain tumors, and overdoses and/or poisonings. Causes of altered mental status. Hypoglycemia. The clinical picture of patients with AMS caused by hypoglycemia is very complex. Patients can have signs and symptoms that mimic stroke and seizures. Because oxygen and glucose are needed for brain function, hypoglycemia can mimic conditions in the brain, such as those associated with stroke. In these cases, the patient may have hemiparesis, similar to what occurs as a result of a stroke. The principal difference, however, is that a patient who has had a stroke may be alert and attempting to communicate normally, whereas a patient with hypoglycemia almost always has an altered or decreased level of consciousness. Patients with hypoglycemia commonly, but not always, take medications that lower the blood glucose level. Thus, if the patient appears to have signs and symptoms of stroke and an AMS, you should report your findings to medical control and treat the patient accordingly. Remember that patients with a decreased level of consciousness should not be given anything by mouth. Patients with hypoglycemia can also experience seizures, and you may arrive at the scene to find a patient in a postictal state, confused and disoriented or unresponsive. The mental status of a patient who has had a typical seizure is likely to improve. However, in a patient with hypoglycemia, the mental status is not likely to improve, even after several minutes. You should consider the possibility of hypoglycemia in a patient who has had a seizure, especially if the patient has a history of diabetes. Likewise, you should consider hypoglycemia in a patient who has AMS after an injury, such as a motor vehicle crash, even when there is the possibility of an accompanying head injury. As with any other patient, you should look for medical identification bracelets or medications that might confirm your suspicions. Other causes of altered mental status. Other causes of AMS include unrecognized head injury and severe alcohol intoxication. Your consideration of other possibilities becomes important because a patient with AMS may be combative and refuse treatment and transport. You should be prepared for difficult patient encounters and follow local protocols for dealing with these situations. In most cases, a patient who appears intoxicated most likely is just that. However, you must consider other problems as well. A person with chronic alcoholism can have liver function, blood clotting, and immune system abnormalities, causing a predisposition to intracranial bleeding, brain and bloodstream infections, and hypoglycemia. Psychological problems and complications of medications are also possible causes of AMS. A person who appears to have a psychological problem may also have an underlying medical condition. Infections are another possible cause of AMS, particularly infections involving the brain or bloodstream. Infections in these areas are life-threatening and require immediate attention. Patients may not demonstrate the typical signs of infection, such as fever, particularly if they are very young or very old or have an impaired immune system. An AMS can also be caused by a drug overdose or poisoning. Patient assessment. Scene size up. Scene safety. Your dispatcher may obtain a lot of information about your patient or very little. Dispatchers are frequently given information regarding a seizure by the caller. Even if the caller has never seen a seizure before, on the basis of the caller's description of the convulsions, the dispatcher will recognize that a seizure is taking place. In some calls, the description of the patient's signs and symptoms will give you a fairly good idea of what the problem may be. The patient has slurred speech or one-sided paralysis. Or the description may be vague. Patient has a headache. There are many ways to describe a patient with an AMS. The most significant difference between an AMS and other emergencies is that your patient cannot tell you reliably what is wrong, and there may be more than one cause. Try to make an early determination if the call is medical or trauma-related, because this sets the tone and approach to the patient. Do not be distracted by the seriousness of the situation or by frightened family members who want you to rush. Look first for threats to your safety and follow standard precautions. Consider the need for spinal precautions based on dispatch information and your assessment of the scene as you approach the patient. Many calls involving a neurologic emergency require ALS if it is available. Call for additional resources early. Mechanism of injury, nature of illness. You will need to look for clues to help you determine the nature of illness. There are special considerations for a patient with a suspected neurologic emergency that include an evaluation of the patient's environment, assessing for any signs of potential trauma, mechanism of injury, indications of a previous medical condition, such as diabetic supplies or medical alert tags, and evidence of a seizure. Be aware of indications of the nature of illness. Did anyone witness what happened? When was the last time anyone saw the patient appearing healthy? Is the patient's bed or furniture in disarray? Most patients with a neurologic emergency display a change in their level of consciousness and their ability to interact with their environment and others. You will need to be alert for other signs and symptoms related to the present illness to help determine the cause of the emergency. Primary assessment. As you begin to assess the patient, remember that your first priority is to look for and treat any life-threatening conditions. Perform a rapid scan. There are many reasons why patients become unresponsive or have an altered level of consciousness, especially from a neurologic cause. Your sound approach to assessing the airway, breathing, and circulation will have a significant impact on how well these systems respond to your care and treatment. Form a general impression. As you approach the patient, gather information from the scene. Is this medical or trauma? Note the patient's body position and level of consciousness. This information will often help set the pace of your call as you are able to determine early on how critical the situation may be. A patient found lying on the ground in an unnatural position is more likely to be a patient with a potentially life-threatening condition than one found sitting up in bed. In a call that indicates that a seizure is taking place, you should be able to tell whether the patient is still having a seizure. Unless you are stationed extremely close to where the patient is located and have an arrival time of a minute or less, most seizures should be over by the time you arrive. If the seizure is still occurring, the potentially life-threatening condition of status epilepticus may be present. If the patient is in a postictal state, he or she may be unresponsive or starting to regain awareness of the surroundings. Determining the patient's level of consciousness should be first in the list of assessment actions for anyone with an AMS. To assess the patient's level of consciousness, use the AVPU, alert to person, place, and day, responsive to verbal stimuli, responsive to pain, unresponsive scale. Airway and breathing. As with any other situation, you should focus on the patient's airway and breathing on arrival. Strokes affect how the body functions in many ways. Patients may have difficulty swallowing and are at risk for choking on their own saliva. Evaluate the airway of an unresponsive patient to make sure it is patent and will remain that way. If the patient requires assistance maintaining an airway, consider an oropharyngeal or nasopharyngeal airway. Provide suction and position the patient to prevent aspiration. If you determine that the patient cannot protect his or her airway, place the patient in the recovery position to help prevent secretions from entering the airway. Suction as necessary. A patient who has had or is having a seizure may have been eating or chewing gum at the time of the seizure, and there may be a foreign body obstruction. Bystanders may have tried to put objects in the patient's mouth to keep the person from swallowing the tongue, even though this practice is not advised. Assess the patient's breathing. All patients with an AMS, regardless of the cause, should receive high-flow oxygen. Seizures cause patients to use up oxygen quickly, resulting in hypoxia. Again, in the immediate postictal state following a seizure, you should anticipate rapid, deep respirations and an accompanying fast heart rate as a result of the stress of the severe convulsions. However, the respirations and the heart rate should begin to slow to normal rates after several minutes. Circulation. Circulation should be confirmed as normal or treated as necessary. Your assessment of the patient's circulation should begin with checking the pulse if the patient is unresponsive. If no pulse is found, immediately begin cardiopulmonary resuscitation and attach an automated external defibrillator. If the patient is responsive, determine whether the pulse is fast or slow, weak or strong. Is the patient in shock? Oxygen administration is helpful for limiting the effects of hypoperfusion to the brain. Evaluate the patient quickly for external bleeding. It is unlikely a patient with a stroke has sustained trauma, but it is possible with a patient who has had a seizure. You should consider this possibility and assess appropriately. Transport decision. You should establish your priorities of care based on your assessment of the patient's level of consciousness and ABCs. How the patient is presenting will guide you as to whether you stay at the scene for further assessment or proceed to immediate transport. If you suspect the patient is experiencing a stroke, you should rapidly transport the patient to an appropriate facility to ensure that every chance is available to reduce the disability caused by an ischemic stroke. History taking. Investigate chief complaint. If the patient is unresponsive, you will need to gather any history of the present illness from family or bystanders. If no one is around, quickly look for explanations for the AMS, e.g. signs of trauma, medical alert tags, track marks, environmental clues, such as empty alcohol or medication containers. To determine the chief complaint in a responsive patient, Begin by asking the patient what happened. Look for signs and symptoms that may indicate a cause for his or her AMS, such as a stroke, or if there is any evidence of a seizure, incontinence, bitten tongue. Evaluate the patient's speech. Is the patient making any sense? Is speech slurred? If you know that the patient has had a seizure and is now in a postictal state, you will not be able to obtain a history from the patient. Look for any obvious trauma or explanations as to why the patient may have had a seizure. Sample history. If the patient is responsive and breathing, obtain a sample history. Also, try to speak with family or friends who may be able to explain the events leading up to the AMS, remembering that time can be critical in a neurologic emergency. Make a special effort to determine the exact time that the patient last appeared to be healthy. In the case of a patient having a stroke, this information will help physicians decide whether it is safe to begin certain treatments that must be given within the first hours after the onset of stroke symptoms. You may be the only person with the opportunity to speak with bystanders to obtain this critical information. Many times, you will be able to find out only that the patient was healthy when he or she went to sleep the night before. Note that in such cases, the time the patient was last seen to be healthy was at bedtime, not when the patient awoke with symptoms. Collect or list all medications the patient has taken. When possible, determine allergies and the patient's last oral intake. Although a patient who has had a stroke may appear to be unconscious and unable to speak, the patient may still be able to hear and understand what is taking place. Therefore, you should avoid making unnecessary or inappropriate remarks. Try to communicate with the patient by looking for indications that the patient can understand you, such as a glance, gaze, motion or pressure of the hand, effort to speak, or head nod. Reassure your patient that you understand, that communication between the two of you may be difficult at this point, but that you will provide him or her with continuous information as to what you and the other team members are doing. Establishing effective communication can help you to calm the patient and lessen the fear that accompanies an inability to communicate. Try to keep in mind that the patient has just experienced a potentially life-threatening event and that anxiety, frustration, and embarrassment may inhibit communication with you. With patients who have had a seizure, your sample history should reveal if the patient has a history of seizures. If so, it is important to find out how the patient's seizures typically occur and whether this episode differs in some way from previous episodes. You should also ask what medications the patient has been taking. If the patient takes phenytoin, Dilantin, and phenobarbital, he or she most likely has a seizure disorder. You might find that the patient ran out of medication or stopped taking the medication for a time. Patients who have a history of seizures and diabetes may use up all glucose in the body to fuel the seizure. If the patient does not have a history of seizures and now suddenly has a seizure, a serious condition such as a brain tumor, intracranial bleeding, or serious infection should be suspected. During this part of the patient assessment process, it is also the time to determine whether the patient takes medications that lower blood glucose, such as insulin or oral hypoglycemic agents. In other situations, you may want to inquire about drug use or exposure to poisons. Secondary assessment. Physical examinations. Your assessment of the patient should continue with a full body scan, paying particular attention to the system involved. If you suspect your patient is having a stroke, then you should direct particular attention to your neurologic assessment. As always, your secondary assessment should include a complete set of vital signs using the monitoring devices you have available. Stroke assessment. You should use a stroke assessment tool as part of your secondary assessment. Many EMS services use the Cincinnati Pre-Hospital Stroke Scale or the Los Angeles Pre-Hospital Stroke Screen to rapidly identify stroke in the field. You should become familiar with what is used in your local protocol. Stroke scales evaluate the face, arms, and speech. If the patient does not have a normal response to these evaluations, you should strongly suspect a stroke. Rapid transport to a designated stroke center is indicated. To test speech, ask the patient to repeat a simple phrase, such as, "The sky is blue in Cincinnati." If the patient does this correctly, you know that he or she understands and can produce speech. If the patient cannot repeat the phrase, the problem may be with either function, understanding speech or producing it. To test facial movement, ask the patient to show his or her teeth, or gums if there are no teeth. Watch to see that both sides of the face around the mouth move equally. If only one side is moving well, you know that something is wrong with the control of the muscles on the other side. To test arm movement, ask the patient to hold both arms in front of his or her body, palms up toward the sky, with eyes closed and without moving. During the next 10 seconds, watch the patient's hands. If you see one side drift down toward the ground, you know that side is weak. If both arms stay up and do not move, you know that both sides of the brain are functioning. If both arms fall to the ground, you have not really learned anything. Perhaps the patient did not understand your instructions. Try the arm test again, but this time move the patient's arms into position yourself. All patients with an AMS, stroke, TIA, seizure, of unknown cause, should also have a Glasgow Coma Scale, GCS, score calculated. Vital signs. Patients with significant intracranial bleeding, hemorrhagic stroke, may have a great deal of pressure in the skull that is compressing the brain, thus slowing the pulse and causing respirations to be erratic. Blood pressure is usually high to compensate for poor perfusion in the brain. Changes in pupil size and reactivity indicate significant bleeding and pressure on the brain. If the patient has an AMS, regardless of the cause, you should check the blood glucose level if you have the equipment available and your local protocol allows. During most active seizures, it is impossible to evaluate vital signs, nor is this the priority when a patient is having a seizure. Unless the situation is unusual, vital signs in a postictal state will approximate normal. Obtain pulse rate, rhythm, and quality, respiratory rate, rhythm, and quality, blood pressure, skin color, temperature, and condition, and pupil size and reactivity. Monitoring devices. As stated previously, if the patient has an AMS, regardless of the cause, you should check the patient's blood glucose level if you have the equipment available and your local protocol allows. Most commonly, this is accomplished using a portable blood glucose monitor, glucometer, similar to the one your patient may use at home. The portable blood glucose monitor measures the glucose level in whole blood using capillary or venous samples. Chapter 17, Endocrine and Hematologic Emergency, discusses the use of a glucometer in more detail. You may also use non-invasive blood pressure methods to monitor blood pressure. It is recommended that you always assess the patient's first blood pressure manually with a sphygmomanometer, blood pressure cuff, and a stethoscope. Reassessment. The reassessment should focus on reassessing the ABCs, vital signs, and interventions provided so far. Patients who have had a stroke can lose their airway or stop breathing without warning. Multiple interventions may be necessary. The effectiveness of airway adjuncts, positive pressure ventilations, and other treatments can only be determined with immediate and continuous observation after providing the intervention. If an intervention is not working, try something else. You have established baseline vital signs already in your assessment, as well as a GCS score. Now is the time to compare that baseline information with updated information. Any changes may indicate if treatments are effective. Watch carefully for changes in pulse, blood pressure, respiration, and GCS scores. Interventions. When your patient shows signs and/or symptoms of stroke, seizure, hypoglycemia, or hypoxia, These conditions typically can be more easily identified, and treatment options are readily available. With other neurologic emergencies, the cause of the patient's symptoms will not always be obvious to you, and you may not be able to determine the cause. It is possible that the hospital will need more time and diagnostic testing to determine the cause. This may make it difficult for you to provide definitive treatment in the field. Most of your interventions will be based on your assessment findings. For example, if the blood glucose level is low, you may give oral glucose according to protocol. Or if a patient is unresponsive, you may need to position him or her in the recovery position to protect the airway. Remember, never to give anything orally to a patient with decreased mental status or a patient who is unable to swallow normally, as this may result in aspiration. Your best treatment in these situations is to perform a thorough assessment and maintain the ABCs. In most patients with a suspected stroke, physicians in the emergency department need to determine whether there is bleeding in the brain. If there is no bleeding, the patient may be a candidate for clot-dissolving medication that may help brain cells survive. The only reliable way to tell whether there is bleeding in the brain is with a special type of imaging test called computed tomography, CT, of the head. Blood is usually easy to see on the CT scan. Some EMS systems designate specific hospitals for patients who may be having a stroke. These institutions have CT scanner technicians, radiologists, and neurosurgeons on duty 24 hours a day. Most hospitals have only one CT scanner and may not have CT technicians available 24 hours a day. It is important that you recognize the signs and symptoms of a stroke and notify the hospital staff as early as possible if you have a stroke alert patient. If the emergency department staff knows that you are transporting a possible stroke patient, they can call in the technician if needed, or may be able to free up the CT scanner so it is immediately available. Keep in mind that most treatments for stroke must be started as soon as possible after the onset of the event. Few, if any, current treatments do any good if they are started more than 3 hours after the stroke begins. Even if 3 hours have passed, prompt action on your part is essential. In most situations, patients who have had a seizure require definitive evaluation and treatment in the hospital. Unless the patient has a well-established history of seizures and is completely alert and oriented, supplemental oxygen is strongly advised, not only to provide extra oxygen, but also to prevent the possibility of a recurrent seizure. Seizures are usually limited in how long they last. Most seizures will not require a significant amount of intervention on your part because the seizure will have ended by the time you arrive. For patients who are having a seizure, protect them from harm, maintain a clear airway by suctioning as necessary, and provide oxygen as quickly as possible. If trauma is suspected, provide spinal immobilization. With recurrent seizures, protect the patient from further injury and manage the airway once the seizure ceases. For patients who continue to have a seizure, as in status epilepticus, suction the airway, provide positive pressure ventilations, and transport quickly to the hospital. If you have the option to rendezvous with ALS, you should do so. The ALS providers have medications that can stop a prolonged seizure. In all cases, you should show patience and tolerance because many of the patients are likely to be confused and occasionally frightened. Many patients who experience seizures are frustrated with their condition and may refuse transport. Kindness and professional behavior are required to help convince the patient that transport is necessary for definitive care. Communication and documentation. Notify the receiving facility of your patient's chief complaint and your assessment findings. Most designated stroke centers will want you to call a stroke alert for patients you have assessed and found to be having a stroke. Check local protocol. This will alert the stroke team members at the hospital and give them time to assemble their resources to treat the patient without delay. Be sure to communicate the time that the patient was last seen to be healthy, the findings of your neurologic examination, and the time you anticipate arriving at the hospital. A key piece of information to document is the time of onset of the patient's signs and symptoms. If the diagnosis is an ischemic stroke, time of onset of the signs and symptoms is critical in determining whether the patient is a candidate for treatment with clot-dissolving drugs. It is also important to document your findings from your stroke scale and the score results of the GCS, along with any changes you found in your reassessment. Document airway management and interventions performed, including the position in which the patient was placed. For patients who have had a seizure, give a description of the seizure activity if known. Include bystanders' comments if they witness the seizure. Document the onset and duration of the seizure. Did the patient notice or express noticing an aura? Record any evidence of trauma and interventions performed. Document whether this is the patient's first seizure or whether the patient has a history of seizures. If the patient has a history of seizure activity, how often does he or she have them? And is there any history of status epilepticus? When you are documenting your interventions, record the time the intervention was performed, the patient's response to the intervention, and the findings of continued reassessments. Emergency medical care. Headache. As discussed earlier, most headaches are harmless and do not require emergency medical care. However, you should be concerned if the patient complains of a sudden onset severe headache or a sudden headache that has associated symptoms. Headaches with fever, seizures, AMS, or following head trauma are potentially life-threatening. Complete a thorough patient assessment and transport the patient to the hospital. Migraine. Treatment of a migraine headache is supportive. However, you should always assess the patient for other signs and symptoms that might indicate a more serious condition. Applying high-flow oxygen, if tolerated, may help ease the patient's condition. When possible, provide a darkened and quiet environment because patients are sensitive to light and sound. Do not use lights and sirens during transport. Stroke. Management of a patient having a stroke in the field is based on supporting the ABCs and providing rapid transport to a stroke center. Depending on the location of the stroke in the brain and the signs and symptoms, the patient may require manual airway positioning. Patients may have difficulty swallowing and controlling their own secretions. Therefore, use suction as needed. Provide high-flow oxygen and monitor the patient's oxygen saturation with a pulse oximeter. A patient's paralyzed extremities will require protection from harm. The patient may not be able to feel his or her extremities or move them out of harm's way as you package and move the patient for transport. You should continuously talk to the patient and inform him or her of what is going on. Most patients having or who have had a stroke understand what is going on, but may not be able to communicate with you. The patient may not be able to physically speak, or when he or she does, inappropriate words may come out. Regardless, the patient will be scared. Reassure the patient and provide emotional support throughout the call. Thrombolytic therapy, clot dissolvers, may reverse stroke symptoms and even stop the stroke if given within 2 to 3 hours of the onset of symptoms. These therapies may not work for all patients, and they cannot be given to patients with bleeding-type hemorrhagic strokes. Because hospital personnel will ultimately make these treatment decisions, you should proceed under the assumption that an area of the brain can still be saved. The sooner the treatment is begun, the better the prognosis for the patient. Spend as little time at the scene as possible. Remember, stroke is an emergency, and time is brain. There may be treatment available for the patient at the hospital, and rapid transport is essential to maximize the possibility of recovery. If available in your area, you should consider transporting the patient to a designated stroke center. Seizure. Most patients who have had a seizure will be in a postictal state on your arrival. For those patients who are still having a seizure, continue to assess and treat the ABCs. It may be necessary to maintain the patient's airway with manual airway positioning. Use suction to clear the airway of any excessive secretions or vomitus. You should consider using a nasopharyngeal airway in a patient having a seizure if you can insert it safely. Oxygen is rapidly consumed by the body during seizure activity. You should monitor the patient's oxygen saturation level with a pulse oximeter and apply high-flow oxygen. Administer oxygen even if you are unable to get an accurate pulse oximetry reading because of the patient's seizure activity, shaking, or tremors. Provide patients with emotional support. It is difficult to safely package a patient having a seizure for transport. Make sure that prior to packaging, you have assessed the patient for trauma and have taken appropriate spinal precautions if indicated. Protecting the patient from his or her surroundings is essential. Never attempt to restrain a patient having a seizure. Injury could result from tonic-clonic movement. Use soft materials for padding and move any objects out of the way that may harm your patient. Not every patient who has had a seizure wants to be transported. It is usually in the best interest of the patient to be evaluated by a physician in the emergency department after a seizure. Your goal is to encourage the patient to be seen by a physician. Should the patient refuse transport, you should be prepared to discuss the situation with the hospital staff on the radio prior to releasing the patient. Ask yourself the following questions if a patient in a postictal state refuses transport. Is the patient awake and completely oriented after a seizure? GCS score of 15? Does your assessment reveal no indication of trauma or complications from the seizure? Has the patient ever had a seizure before? Was this seizure the usual seizure in every way? Length, activity, recovery? Is the patient currently being treated with medications and receiving regular evaluations by a physician? If the answer to all of these questions is yes, you may consider agreeing to a patient's refusal for transport if the patient can be released to a responsible person and monitored. If any one of the questions has a no answer, strongly encourage the patient to be transported and evaluated. Follow your local protocols for patients who refuse care and transport. Altered mental status. The signs and symptoms of AMS can vary widely, from simple confusion to coma. No matter what the cause, you should consider AMS to be an emergency that requires immediate attention, even when it appears that it may be caused by alcohol intoxication or minor head trauma. Your care should include determining the cause, mechanism of injury versus nature of illness, spinal immobilization as indicated, airway and ventilation support, and transport to the appropriate facility.